if I could ask you to set up and settle, and we'll begin. Okay, we're ready to start, and I'm on a mission because I've just seen we need to finish early to get a bus to the gala night as well. So there's nothing like deadlines to work to. Let me welcome the Inter-Registrar Transfer Policy, GNSO Working Group, which I think is the first time we've had a GNSO Working Group visit us as such. So we are honoured to welcome you, and over to you.
Thank you, Leslie. My name is James Bladel. I'm representing a GNSO registrar and co-chair of the policy development process for the inter-registrar transfer policy. And I understand from staff that is correct. This is the first time in the entire history of ICANN that a GTLD policy working group has come to the CCNSO and essentially asked them for their assistance and their experience. So hopefully we represent ourselves well and that we don't close the door to future invitations, and we certainly appreciate your time on this. So, Giovanni, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks a lot, James. Basically, this session, I don't know if James would like to say a bit more of the scope of this working group at GNSO level, and the objective of this 30-minute session is to provide some input to this working group about how change of registrant is dealt with in the CCTLD space. And I understand, and I was, to be honest, quite surprised. I was not fully aware of that there is not a sort of uniform policy in the GTLD space for this, while in the CCTLD space, let's say that each registry operator at CCTLD level has a specific way to deal with change of registrant procedures, and that depends a lot on the kind of registrant model has been chosen by the CCTLD operator. Before leaving the floor again to James, yesterday when preparing for moderating this panel, I just, search a bit the Centra website. And Centra, during 2011, there have been two surveys about the change of registrant and how the Centra members are dealing with the change of registrant. And those two surveys, they have touched different elements of the change of registrant policy, including how much is the registry involved, how much is the registrar involved, if the operation can be performed entirely by the registrar or there should be an intervention by the registry. And I think those two could be the outcome of those two surveys, the findings of those two surveys could be something interesting to share with this working group. Of course, that has to be, you have to ask this to the Center Secretariat and they'll follow up. But I'm sure that it's a good basis to start from. So if James likes to explain a bit more the objective of this working group and eventually the time frame for you to develop a sort of proposal, if any.
Yeah, thanks, Giovanni. This is the third in a series of five working groups that will refine and update the transfer policy in GTLDs. It's a very important component of the competitive market that registrants who are unhappy with the services from a registrar be able to take their domain name registrations to a competitor and to be able to do this relatively seamlessly and without interference from their current registrar. And through the whole course of looking at all of the issues that are causing confusion, perhaps, or friction in these transactions, we identified that for GTLDs in the ICANN space, there is no such thing as a change of control policy. And by this we mean there is no function to change the registrant of a domain name. You can change the registrar. You can type new information into the whois, but and make another party responsible for a domain name. But it's very informal. It's very ad hoc. All the registrars, and there are approximately 1,000 accredited entities, handle it differently. And so this is, as you might aware, this has posed a number of questions about, well, why is this the case? Can this be improved? Can there be a standard process that allows two parties to change control or change registrant of a domain name? And can it be done securely so that those with knowledge of the process can't use it to disadvantage registrants who may be less familiar with the process? There's a very healthy and vibrant and innovative domain name aftermarket with auctions and sales, buying and selling of domain names that also would benefit from, could benefit from a secure and uniform policy. So in our discussions about this, we note that many registrars, including the company that I work for, as well as McKaylee and some of the other registrars that are represented here in the room, we, in addition to GTLDs, also offer registrations in a number of CCTLDs, and that CCTLDs have some experience in this area. In fact, we looked very hard to find a CCTLD that did not have a change of registrant policy, and I haven't found one yet. So we looked at a few examples, and I'll just scroll down here briefly. For example, and these are European examples, but they didn't necessarily have to be European examples. They were just, I think, the ones that were more readily available to us. We looked at the transfer functions from Nominet, UK, from URID, from IE, and from ES, and looked at some of the elements of that. So the question that we're bringing to the CCNSO is, with the variety and diversity of experience in this room, can you tell us what can you tell us about this process? Do you feel that this is something that all registries should have? I think we're starting to coalesce around that opinion. Can you tell us what dangers we may have overlooked? What vulnerabilities? Or what elements have to be required? I guess we're kind of throwing open the floor to the folks in this room who have experience with this function to help give us some advice and guidance and lend us some of your expertise in this area.
Thank you, James. I'd just like to add that probably it would be also worth to explore a bit and share some of our experience with this working group about changes that might have happened or might are currently happening in the CCTLD space, in the sense that I know that some of us in the past, they had quite strict policies when it comes to a change of registrant, and some of us are moving to more softer policies. So that is also something that we could share with this working group, because I know there is a tendency, and you have in front of you somebody that in the early years was coming from .IT, and in .IT, if you wanted to change a registrant 10 years ago, and the registrant, the holder of the domain, unfortunately, had that, was that in that case, the registry had to receive basically a copy of the last will of of the registrant, and that to prove that the domain name sometimes was not in the last will, and so it could have been moved to another registrant. But if it was in the last will, of course we had to follow the last will instructions, and it was quite an experience to see that some of these people relating to with us, they didn't delete some information. On the contrary, we could see how some people were cutting out from the last will some people of the family and much more. So in terms of this, I just like to also invite you to share this kind of experiences, in the sense if there's been an evolution from a strict model to a more open model in terms of changing of registrant. And I leave the floor open to Anybody like to? Dabby? Yes.
Debbie Monaghan from .nz. We actually don't specify exactly how registrars have to process a change of registrant, but rather we set minimum requirements as to what they need to do, and then they can build from that, but they have to have it documented. And essentially, in the case of the will, for example, Giovanni, essentially the executor's got the right to actually sign on behalf and make the changes on behalf of the registrant. And we assist registrars if required, but essentially directors can make the decision for a company and various other such things. We also have exercised our right in a case where fraud was used to actually sign the documents to actually reverse the transaction back to how it was. So I think it's important that you keep the power to actually take back a transaction if fraud's actually been used in that situation. And just briefly, in respect of changing registrars, we have what we call a UDI, and the UDI has to be provided on request to the registrant, and the registrar can't decline to provide that even if they're owed money. They have to release that UDI, and then the registrant is free to transfer to a different registrar. And the other protection we have is if the registrar refuses to provide the UDI, we will step in, provide the UDI to the registrant email address, and then take action against the registrar for not meeting their obligations.
Thank you, Debbie. Appreciate that. And in fact, your discussion about the minimum requirements that you require for each registrar was very similar to a suggestion that we received in our open comments. So I think that we'll definitely take that under advisement. Any other speakers? You want to share their?
We have Leslie.
Leslie and
Roloff of .nl.
Seeing as you've already studied Nominet, I'm not going to go into great detail on some of our procedures, but just talk to your question around should everyone have this. I think yes, because that kind of seemed pretty obvious. But I think in terms of your other question on, is there a move to making this softer, or what are the requirements that you'd put in place? I think that's a real good one to unpack a bit. In our experience, who controls the registrant field, if I call it that, can be quite an interesting discussion. And we very much want to make sure that the registrant doesn't get their name taken away from them or doesn't get it stolen and so on, so that there is a high level of security and trust in the whole process. But equally, people do sell their names, die, etc., and all of the things that one might expect. And when those type of events happen, they want a process that is cheap, that is secure, that can be trusted, and doesn't take a long time. And like many things in this field, there's kind of a trade-off between security and speed and cost and so on. And I'd encourage your working group to kind of think about some of those aspects from the customer's shoes.
Thank you. Excellent. And I would point out that we had another scenario that we hadn't considered going into this, but you had just your thoughts reminded me, is the side effect of not having a change of control policy that has a law enforcement aspect to it, which is that I could create a criminal or infringing domain name registration and assign it to Giovanni without his knowledge, without his acceptance, without his agreement, and make someone else legally responsible, at least in the whois, for domain names. So this is another issue that is a side effect or a consequence of not having this policy that maybe putting something in place here would help to address. So, go ahead.
Ralph with .nl.
Yeah, Ralph Meyer, .nl. The way we handle it is very similar to .nz, I think. It's up to the registrar to run that process. We have certain criteria, but not too many. And there's one very important one, but it's valid for a lot of transactions, and that is that the registrar can only transfer control on the explicit instruction of the registrant. And he needs to have documented proof of the request in case of a transfer of ownership. But I find it interesting that it's an issue for you, because it's not very much an issue at our level. Transfer from registrar to registrar is much more transaction that gives us a lot of attention from all kinds of areas, and this one normally runs very smoothly.
Roloff, just to explain part of the problem with gTLDs, pretty much all ccTLDs, with a couple of exceptions, are thick registries. So the registry, you have the data about any registrants, any changes, everything. With thin registries, in other words, .com and .net, the registry can only see the registrar and the name servers. They have no access to the registrant data, which is part of the problem, part of the potential problem, let's just say.
Thank you, and everybody knows Michele, but just in case, Michele and Elon of Black Knight.
Hi, good morning. This is Fernando from Fernando España from .us. If I could just add a couple of comments and observations, I guess implementing some sort of mechanism to validate the transfer of registrant at a ccTLD level is probably a little bit easier because usually you deal with one jurisdiction. But when you try to implement something like that at the gTLD level, where you're dealing with multiple jurisdictions, it does become a little bit more complicated. If I could look back a few years back when the old network solutions days, even before ICANN was in place, I remember that when you had to transfer ownership of a domain name, there was a form, a paperwork that you had to fill out, get it notarized. And getting a notarized document in the U.S. is fairly simple. You go to a bank and anybody can, there's a notary publics that don't even charge any fee, or if there's a fee associated, it can be $10, $20 at the most. But the problems that we encountered was that in different jurisdictions, getting a notarization document involved $500. You had to go to an embassy, and it could take 3-4 months to actually get a document notarized. So those were some of the complications that we encountered at Network Solutions when we tried to implement it at the global perspective, at the global level. So I just wanted to add those comments.
Yeah, thank you. Good points.
Annabeth, here. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. It's Annabeth Lange for .no, the Norwegian registry. We have had a very strict regime in Norway, and we still have in some ways, but it's more and more liberalized with us as well. But as for transferring from one registrant to another, up till very soon, to do the 1st of February, actually, we had to do that on the paper. But now everything has been electronic through the registrar, so that it's much more easy for the registrants. But when you have to sign a self-declaration when you register a domain name. So the registrars are responsible for doing that also electronically. But if we ask for it, if it's some problems, then we can have it. So, and it's also a domain lock. You can, as a registrant, you can ask for having a domain lock. So the registrar is incapable of transferring that to another without the consent. And that seems to function very well.
So, one very quick question about this lock. Is that set at the registry level or at the registrar level? Just to clarify.
No, it's the registrar level. It's the registrar level. Yeah.
Thank you. And you know, one other challenge that we encountered when we were discussing this was also very appropriately similar to what you face in the ccTLDs, is that many ccTLDs have eligibility requirements for a registrant, that you can't just be anyone. You have to be a citizen or have some sort of connection to a location or be a member of a society or an association. And one of the challenges that we've encountered is that in the gTLD space, this is not really an issue, but it is a potential issue both in the sponsored TLDs as well as the new anticipated community TLDs that will be applied for. So a question for the group would be, do you have any thoughts or concerns when a registrant is transferring to another registrant a domain name, that there are checks in place to ensure that that new registrant is also equally eligible for domain name.
Please.
Yeah, Dave Archibald, KY Domain, Cayman Islands. We have just that issue. You must be a resident of the Cayman Islands, and you must have a resident admin contact as well. Basically, we just don't allow the transfer of domains whatsoever. The only people that can change the registrant is the registry. And that has the added benefit of we don't want a secondary market to be generated, so it prevents a secondary market. So we're an extreme.
Hi, it's Mike. It's Mike Stewart from .ca, and as you may know, we've got the eligibility requirements as well. I think the dilemma you'll find is it quickly gets into the same kind of discussion you had with who is validation. You're almost going to be required to do inline validation if you're going to try to do those checks for new registrants, and I think that creates the same kind of issues. We don't currently have those inline validation checks, but we do have the requirements, and any new registrant need those requirements, and we do the kind of usual post registration validation processes to see that the new registrants do comply. But again, I think that would be a really complicated issue with any large TLD to try to do inline.
Can I just make a plea on behalf of the 10 remote participants to speak as clearly and as loudly without deafening us all in the room? I think there's quite a problem with sound for the remote participants. Please.
If I could just ask one quick follow-up. Is it common for CIRA to then, after the fact, if you detect that domain name has gone to an ineligible registrant, is the process then to cancel that registration or reverse the transaction? What's the general approach?
Sure. We don't particularly monitor transfers per se. Our validation is done kind of registry-wide, but if we do find a registrant who doesn't comply with the eligibility requirements, there's a process to validate their information, which if they don't respond or don't provide the data, first leads to suspension, and then ultimately if they can't comply or show compliance, we cancel the domain.
So you would treat them no differently than if someone who was ineligible to begin with registered a domain
exactly.
name? Okay, thank you. Okay.
It's almost the same as in CIRA, actually, because if a transfer is considered as a new application in a way, the deletion and a new application, so therefore they have to comply with the same rules as the first one. So if we have a thick list, and we know quite a lot about the registrants, and we wash it up to the registry where we have number, the trade number that they need to have to have a domain name, and then they are washed quite continually against these registers. So then once in a while we find a lot of these applicants that do not comply any longer with the rules. So they will then be contacted by us and be given a chance to rectify, or if not, they
It is an extremely interesting but also complex topic, and we are almost approaching the end of this session as we have a quite tight schedule. One last question from me, and it's about in the past decade we have changed procedures and policies about the change of registrant. Is there anything you like to recommend on the basis of the experience you have or the feedback you receive from the registrar and registrar? Is there any, let's say, core element you like to bring to the attention of this working group? And I'm sure that there should be a follow-up in the future to make sure that we convey as much input as possible to those people that will have to work on a paper. And at the same time, I also want to underscore something that Leslie said, and it's about the security aspect in this process, because many of us, they are thinking quite a lot about from the registrant perspective, and again, that is really related to security, and it's one of the most important aspects to avoid identity theft or any kind of unfortunate circumstance that can happen during a registrant transfer process. So is there anybody who would like to comment on this, provide input on this? Peter?
Peter Vergoto from from the NSBE. I would like to share some of our experience, because just last year we changed our transfer policy, and we came from a system that is an exact match with URID system. It's that a transfer of registrant requires a specific transaction closely related to a simple transfer of the domain name. It's the trade. Now, the advantage of such a procedure is that it is highly reliable in terms of security, because you have the procedure initiated by the registrar, and you have a verification by staff of the registry. And you are sure that both parties, the former and the new registrant, are aware of the situation, and like the situation that Michele described cannot occur, or James, sorry, that you have a transfer with a risk domain to somebody who isn't aware that he becomes owner of that domain. So that's the advantage. The disadvantage is that it can be frustrating for registrars, because you have to sacrifice on the effectiveness and on the speed of the operation. Now, we departed from that type of transaction, and we introduced a transaction that is much more close to the current transfer procedure for GTLDs. It's triggered and initiated by the registrar. We send out an authorization code, and as soon as that authorization code is given to the new registrar, the transfer is immediately carried out. Disadvantage, there is no verification from the registry any longer, so there is a higher risk on insecurity. Advantage clearly is that the transfer, whether it's a plain transfer or a transfer or a change of registrant, is immediately carried out. Now, this just proves that there is no ideal solution. But, and to come back to my point, what is our specific experience? We just finished a registrar survey, and 90% of the registrars is very positive about the changes that we have implemented. So if you ask our experience, checked with our registrars, what should be the most important factor, a hyper secure but not efficient procedure, or a procedure where you trust your registrars and you gain in speed, clearly the preference goes to this latter, to the latter. Thank you.
Thank you. And I see that we have now approached the end of our allocated time, so I wanted to once again express our gratitude for the CCNSO and allowing us some time on your agenda and sharing some of your experiences and your cautions with us. This is, as you mentioned, a very complex issue that once we start scratching away at the surface, it becomes very very intricate and has a lot of consequences that we want to be very careful. So if there's any other feedback maybe that comes to you later after the meeting that you'd like to contact us, I think that if you could relay that through Giovanni, through Marika, who is the policy staff member on the GNSO side that's working with us on this working group, we would certainly appreciate anything that you have to offer. And again, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you, James. And I will follow up with Marika just in case there is a way to channel more input. And we will be really happy to do so. Thank you.
Thank you, guys, and you're welcome to come and visit again. I think this is a very interesting topic for many of us. Okay, We are going to break, and I know coffee's a very long way away from here. We're going to break for coffee now, and back again at 11, please. Promptly. Thank you.